This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball game is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Sauce after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Let's go back to the phone lines, 877-377-6963. Billy Joe, Tiger fans on the phone. What's going on, Billy Joe?
Hey, God bless y'all. Good morning. How y'all doing?
We're doing great.
I want to say yowie wowie. Is this y'all's first year for the Arkansas head coach of basketball? It's his first year, right?
That's right.
Y'all got a lot to look up for. I think y'all are evenly with Kentucky. You know, Y'all missing shots. When good teams miss shots, that's what happened. Y'all ain't no bad team, you know. I think y'all are a good team. I see a lot of good things looking up for y'all. What y'all think about the NFC AFC championship games? There were some good games, right? Forest County even out. They both of them even out. I hope Andy Reid wins the Super Bowl after what everything that went down in Philadelphia to get him to this point. I think he's due for a Super Bowl. I like Andy Reid. I think he's a great coach. You know, I'm going to leave y'all with that. Y'all have a blessed day and stuff. And
All right.
Land the plane.
All right, bye.
Thank you, Billy Joe. We appreciate it. We knew what you were trying to say.
Yeah, land the plane.
Yeah, there you go. But yes, appreciate it, Billy Joe. But to go back to your point of Arkansas, and yeah, which we'll talk about the Super Bowl as it's coming up. But you know, I think that I'm not saying that Arkansas and Eric Musselman just put everybody on notice, but I think that people are starting to see what Eric Musselman is building and what they're capable of. Because I was even watching last night Moses Moody, who was in the special game he was in with Monteverdi. And they kept talking about him and his commitment to Arkansas and about Eric Musselman. And just, they're like, man, you know, he's going to have Arkansas back at a very high level. And it's not just because of the recruiting, but I think people are starting to pay attention. It's like what he's doing with this team, with the fact that they are lacking in size, they're lacking in having that NBA caliber player right now. I mean, they're lacking in a lot of ways, and he's got him basically going to be playing in the NCAA tournament at this point. It's really, people are starting to take notice of Arkansas and Eric Musselman.
I think what you want about Kentucky, they were ranked 10th coming into that game. Now they may fall some from 10 because of the loss midweek. I suspect they will when the poll comes out. But, you know, this is still a top 20 team, certainly with Kentucky. And I think a team by the end of the year is, you know, it's going to be hard to beat.
Yeah.
So, but I think Arkansas is going to get harder to beat too.
That's right.
So.
That's right. In fact, and this
There's
is
just
what
no I, shame in what happened on Saturday.
No, not at all. Not at all. And this is what really I want to talk about here in this segment, because we all know the pivotal moment of this game. Like, there is one pivotal moment of this game that changed it all.
Yep.
And that was simply John Calipari getting ejected. Now, to set it up, I have to play Chuck's call of this because it's pretty fantastic to hear not only him, but to hear the roar of the crowd when it happens. Take a listen.
They're going to call an illegal screen as quickly popped out, and the turnover is going to give it to Arkansas with 8:19 to go.
Coach, Kentucky's really frustrated. E.J. Montgomery, who has not scored and got no rebounds in this game, illegal screen. Hogs are looking good
They just teed up Calipari. I wondered how long it was going to take him. He was on the other side of the midcourt strike. Eric Musselman's out there, too. Clay Moser's going to pull Mus back. Cal's been teed up. The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game. Listen to the crowd at Bud Walton Arena. John Calipari is being escorted to the locker room. Two technicals on the Kentucky head coach. And that's just changed this ball game on a dime.
Well, Chuck was right about one thing. It did change the ball game on a dime, but not in the favor of the Razorbacks, because after that, Kentucky then went on to a 15-0 run and never looked back.
Yeah. I mean, Arkansas grabbed a short lead there. Now, let's go back to what caused all of that, or or what probably led to the frustration or the boiling over point. Arkansas had, you know, had led the foul count pretty healthy for most of the second half. In fact, Arkansas got into the bonus early in the second half, and the foul count hung around 8-1, 8-2. I think when those technicals were called, it was 8-3 or 4. So that probably is one of the factors. There had been a couple of offensive fouls that had given that I didn't think were probably ones you're going to put on the clinic tape that were called against Mason Jones. But I think the foul count had gotten lopsided. The crew said, we're going to find a way to even it back up a little bit.
Yeah, because Arkansas was in the bonus 5 minutes into the second half.
Exactly.
I mean, it was quick.
And then the illegal screen call occurred. Now, was it an illegal screen? By the letter of the law, yes.
By Rule 25-3-7, yes.
There ain't no Rule 25, but okay. But it was certainly not one that would probably be one you, again, would put on the clinic tape, or one that you would probably say, hey, this was the best call of the game. It was what we would say is marginal.
Yeah.
And that seemed to, but what I didn't understand from Calipari is he was given the flop, the new flopping signal. He was wanting to flop. Well, there was no flop on that play, and that wasn't the kind of play where no one went bailing out, diving out like they'd been shot out of a cannon from the contact. It was just simply an illegal screen call that clearly Montgomery moved. His feet clearly moved on that inbound play. But he had wanted several times flopping warnings to be called on Arkansas on a couple plays. There was one with the elbow on the play in the paint. To me, that was pretty straightforward. So he was seemingly frustrated over not being able to get a flopping warning. And the play, he was really griping about that again and got the first technical. To me, that didn't apply in that situation, what he was asking for.
Yeah.
Now, whatever he said to get the second one clearly was the magic words, because both Patrick Evans and Brian Shea, two of the three officials in the game, both immediately gave him the ejection signal.
Yeah, well, if you want to go on Twitter and look at Russell Shapp's video that he put out kind of like a sideline video that he took. If you want to read lips.
I've seen it.
Yeah, if you want to read lips, you can kind of see some of the things that Calipari was saying to the officials that maybe warranted that. But first off, John Calipari has done this before. This is not just such a rare thing to see John Calipari get ejected. Nope. He's done it before. In fact, it was either last season or season before. We talked about before the show that at South Carolina, it was a similar situation. It was a raucous atmosphere. He felt like his team was getting the short end of the stick. Got himself ejected. Kentucky ended up, coming back and winning that game. So
it seems like, and I hadn't gone back and checked a bunch of their box scores, but it seems like Calipari does this about once a year.
Yeah.
And it's usually on the road. You mentioned that South Carolina game. For some reason in my head, I want to say Anthony Jordan was the referee in that game too.
Maybe there's a connection there.
Maybe we can start connecting some dots there. But Anthony Jordan's one of the, he's been around this league for more than a decade. Veteran official in this league. So, I do think Calipari is not afraid to get thrown out about once a year, particularly on the road when he thinks he needs to lift his team. I'm not sitting here saying this was calculated. He went into the game planning it. He was waiting on his moment. I think an opportunity presented itself, and he seized it.
Yeah. I think he got ejected on purpose, but like you said, not calculated, but more like when that moment happened, he said, all right, as people like to talk about when Nolan Richardson would do that, just kind of like, I'm going to make them throw me out because I know that my team's going to be fine, capable of it if I leave here. Like they're going to be just fine. They're a good team. And also, I think he saw that the momentum had shifted completely and totally in Arkansas's favor. And he saw this as an opportunity to say, all right, I'm going to get my own team fired back up by getting tossed. Because, I could be wrong about this, Tommy. You know it a lot better than I do. But I just feel like in most cases, when a coach gets a technical and then keeps on going in that same event and gets another technical and then gets ejected, that coach wants it. That coach wants to get out of there. He wants to get tossed. Because, you got to really, again, you could speak more to it, but you got to really try and really keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing to get two technicals within a span of 30 seconds. I mean, is that fair to say?
Yes, and particularly in a moment where what he was complaining over wasn't like open and shut. Boy, this was a really an egregious miss by the officiating crew. You know, a real injustice was done. He wasn't out there. This wasn't like when Bielema sat on the field at the Belt Bowl. Yeah. That was clearly an incorrect application of the rule. And he stayed out on the field till they got it correct. And this was not that situation. The crew had not misapplied a rule that you may disagree with the call, but this wasn't some kind of egregious swing and miss by the crew. So, you know, to me, that's his actions were not warranted, and his ejection was based on the fact that he got a technical, he didn't return to his coaching box, and he kept on.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, he was doing that on purpose. After the first one, I think his decision to get ejected came after he'd gotten the first technical.
Yeah, yeah. And even Eric Musselman, after the game, understood what the ejection meant to Kentucky in the momentum swing.
I thought the whole momentum changed after that in Kentucky's favor in every way, shape, and form. So, yes, we had the momentum during a dead ball, and after that, it completely changed. I mean, that would be something that, you know, I'm not inside their locker room or inside their huddles. So I just know the momentum completely changed.
It was unfortunate, too, because when that moment happened, and I was actually, I got to sit in a suite, Tommy, for the first time ever. So not to brag or anything, but it was nice.
Sounds like you were.
Yeah, well, got to throw them out when I can. But just actually being in the atmosphere, I thought that was when Arkansas was just going to step on the throat and finish them off because they had just gone on this big run. The atmosphere was at a fever pitch frenzy that I had not seen before in a long time. I mean, when you see the video of the Kentucky basketball player standing next to Calipari, and when he gets ejected, he has to put his fingers inside of his ears because it is so loud. Like it just was, and there was just a great moment. And I don't know if you saw the picture, Tommy, but Dave Van Horn was waving John Calipari off the court, saying bye. I mean, it was everything was going Arkansas's way, and they just couldn't overcome the run that Kentucky went on. It was just youth. I thought that was when Arkansas was really going to take over and finish them off, but Kentucky's too good of a team for that.
Just to trace it back, it really started before then because Kentucky scored their 42nd point of the game with 14:42 to go.
Mm-hmm.
When John Calipari got ejected, the game was tied at 44 with 8:19 on the clock. So that's another part of what was frustrating Cal. His team wasn't playing good in that stretch because they had went from up 8 to tied. Call goes against him on the illegal screen, and the pot boils over. So now they go from up 8 when it was 42-34 to game tied, tough road atmosphere, and you got a tie ball game with 8 minutes to go in the game, 8:19 on the clock. After the two technicals, Arkansas led 47-44, and then, like you said, the 15-0 run, 15-5 run eventually took off, and Kentucky never looked back.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great move by John Calipari, if that's what he was doing, which we'll never know. But I would just say that as much as I hate that man, I hate him. I can't stand him. But I think that he knows his team. He's been there before. He's an elite coach. And in that moment, they needed some sort of spark, and that's obviously what worked out for him.
Yeah.
I mean, he knows his team, and if that was the case, then kudos to him because it worked out. It's just Arkansas could not overcome that run they went on, and that's what it came down to at the end of the game.
From that point on, Kentucky outscored Arkansas 29-22. So, Arkansas actually outscored Kentucky in the second half, but it was only by two.
Yeah, and they just couldn't make the plays down the stretch. And when he had Mason Jones foul out. And Desi Sills foul out later in the game, too. And I know that in some cases, some people felt like the game was already over. Like, that's just not going to do you any favors whatsoever. But, and also the rebounds. Arkansas got out rebounded 47-29. I mean, it's story of that, too. I mean, these are just the things you're going to have to. We know the formula of Arkansas and what they have to do to win, especially against great, great teams. You have to get three balls by Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones. You got to get Jimmy Witt to make his inside little shots that he's been making most of the season. And you got to be able to count on Adrio Bailey to play well defensively down low. And those are the things that you're going to have to do. But again, I don't see this game as any sort of indicator that now Arkansas is going to, they're going to take steps back, or this team isn't as good as what we thought they were. I don't take that from this. I take it as this was a good measuring stick to show where you're truly at as a team right now. Where do you stack mm-hmm. up with the rest of college basketball? And right now they're not to the level of Kentucky. And that's not to say that they aren't a good team. They're just not to that top 20, top 15, top 20 level right now. And they got a lot of games to play. They got a lot of SEC games to play. It starts with Mississippi State on the road this week, which is going to be tough. Then you got the Big 12 SEC Challenge on Saturday against TCU. You're going to have more opportunities. I just don't see this as any sort of indication to say, well, this team actually isn't as good as what we thought. I think quite the opposite. It just shows you where you're at, and you could still win and still beat a lot of quality teams, especially in the SEC.
Well, you lose one at home, that means you got to go steal one on the road. And Wednesday night, Arkansas takes on Mississippi State. If you're looking to get out and enjoy the game, go to Joe's Grill and Cantina. You can watch every Hall game, half-price apps and taps during the game. Plus, that's their Wednesday special. So even before and after the game, they're going to have half-price apps and taps for you. But this, every game, you can get out and watch the Hogs. Brisket nachos, Mexican pizza, the big sampler platter. It's all at Joe's Grill and Cantina, 3400 South 74th Street, across from Harps for half-price apps and taps. And that's really what they got to do, John, is now you got to go on the road and win one. Mm-hmm. You needed to win all of your home games in conference play is really what you're aiming for. So you've lost one, so you got to go steal one more on the road than you planned on winning.
Mm-hmm. And I think Arkansas is perfectly capable of that. I mean, some of the teams that they're going to play on the road, like Alabama is not a very good team. They play them on the road. Missouri is not a good team. They play them on the road. Florida has been surging as of late, but Texas A&M, you got another opportunity there. I mean, you're going to have, as far as your road games go, they're not going to be easy. There's no such thing as an easy road game, especially in conference play. But I think that they are perfectly capable of going and stealing a game on the road. And if you talk about resume building, beating TCU would be a huge resume builder. You still got Auburn, who's actually lost two in a row now and got blown out past two games. They'll still be a good team, though, and you welcome them home. So mm-hmm. you're going to have plenty of opportunities to steal some road wins and also get some more resume-building wins against some of these teams as well.
Yeah, and, you know, some of the teams that are proving to be harder outs around this league, South Carolina being one, you get at home. Mississippi State, you're going to see them this week, but back at home as well. Florida's surging right now. Auburn lost two this week, and Florida got them on Saturday. You play Florida on the road, that's going to be a tough one. And you mentioned some of these other teams that are winnable. Tennessee comes here, so that's good. You get another shot at LSU at home. But, again, all that, it's so far down the road, you don't worry about it. It's how do you get one on the road this week? How do you maybe have a 2-0 week?
Yeah. Which, if they beat Mississippi State on Wednesday night, I like their chances in that. And I like Arkansas's ability to bounce back because they haven't lost 2 in a row so far this year. And I think that this team, when they really get refocused in, They always have nice bounce back victories, I guess I should say, because if you look at the losses they had this year, when they lost to Western Kentucky on the road, they played Tulsa that next week and won by 21 points. And they just destroyed Tulsa. When they lost to LSU on the road, they bounced back and won on the road against Ole Miss. So just saying that when they had these losses, they bounced back pretty well. And again, if you haven't seen the press conference of Eric Musselman after the Kentucky game, go to hitthatline.com and watch it, because I tried to see if he ever looked up from his paper, from his desk, from his old, whatever that's called, the dais, I don't know, whatever that thing's called that he's sitting at.
The press conference table?
The press conference table. That thing. He does not look up once. No. Compared to his other press conferences, like this one hurt him.
He was just staring down at the box score.
Yeah. Staring daggers at it. Like he wanted it to change so bad. He was trying to will it with his mind to change the score, and he couldn't. Like that's how much he truly hates losing. Well,
he mentioned this in those comments that they let this one get away. They know this one was winnable. They had Kentucky on the ropes, and they didn't finish it off. And there's no one to blame but themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the part that eats them up, is they know they were good enough.
Yeah,
it's one thing to go get beat just because the other team. And I'm not saying Kentucky's not better, because they were better on Saturday. Yeah. They are a better basketball team at this point. But Arkansas was good enough to win that ball game.
Yeah, and here's even Eric Musselman talking about the disappointment of it, especially with the fact that the atmosphere was absolutely there for a victory.
But look, this one hurts. I mean, we had an incredible environment in the building. You know, we don't want to let our fans down. It's hard to create that atmosphere. and get that, that atmosphere back, and the locker room's hurting, and I thought we played hard, didn't make enough threes. I mean, we got to make, you know, 2 to 4 more threes to beat a team like Kentucky.
I mean, he understands it. I mean, he knows that this one hurts, and that they are, like you said, Tommy, they're a good enough team to beat Kentucky.
Well,
they just didn't make those plays.
He mentions the threes. That was going to be something that we're going to talk with Clay Henry about coming up. He'll join us at the top of the hour. 8 of 26, 30%. It's not really the percentage in the game. It's exactly what Coach said. The fact that you only made 8 is the problem.
Yeah.
So, you got to be in a double. For this team, you need to be in double digits and probably more like 12 to 15 in a game like this to win.
Yeah. And this is not a slight against him, but Jalen Harris making 2 of those 8 three-pointers is showing just how much some of your other guys struggle. I mean, Isaiah Joe went 3 of 11. Mason Jones only went 1 of 5. Now, Adriel Bailey made a 3, and Desi Sills made a 3. So, I mean, you had some joint effort there, but, yeah, you have to make a few of those to win a game like this. And to see Eric Musselman understand as how big of a deal it was, I think I appreciate personally. But also, like, he says that, you know, that atmosphere is hard to get back. I'm like, I don't know about that. Because Musselman, if you start winning at the high level, I'm not saying that it'll always be that level at Kentucky, but you'll be seeing it a lot more consistently if you get it back to a winning level.
You know, it's a shame that the Auburn game's on a Tuesday.
I know.
Because if that was a Saturday, I think you'd have a repeat.
Yeah, but if Arkansas goes, I'll tell you what, though, if they start going on a run here, especially if they beat Mississippi State on Wednesday, I think TCU will be a great one as well. But, yeah, it's going to be hard to mimic that Kentucky one for sure.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, available in black cherry, strawberry, lemon, lime, and mango.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas.
We've been recapping Arkansas and Kentucky over the weekend. And Clay, I'm interested in your take because I have my opinion on this matter. And I know a lot of people do. It just kind of depends on your age and what games you went to. But as far as atmospheres, loudness, all of that from Kentucky on Saturday, where does that rank for you as far as Arkansas games in Bud Walton Arena? Because it seems like to me it's been a long time since it ever got to that point.
Yeah, this would be one of the best. And I think that the Missouri game, I guess that would have been, the second game in Bud Walton the first year. Nothing has matched that yet. And that was like the game where you felt like the crystal ball was opened up and the energy of Barnhill came out. And, you know, they won by 50. And, I mean, it was just from start to finish, it was almost like a coronation of a great team, and it was. So I always say that the crowd has a hard time holding noise unless the team plays great start to finish. There were peaks in this game that matched that Arkansas-Missouri game, you know, what was it, 28 years ago? But it didn't sustain it for the whole game because the team didn't. But there were obviously the point of the game where Calipari was ejected. That was magical. It was pretty. You know, the Kentucky players are covering their ears, and I don't think I've seen that before. You know, but if you go back to that Missouri game, and that was a Missouri team that went undefeated in the Big Eight, probably Norm Stewart's best team, and Arkansas demolished them to the point that Norm Stewart did not call timeouts. He kept them all, and he said, I did not want to slow anything down to get out of here. In other words, I just wanted to be gone. And great coach, and understood that there wasn't anything he could do that was going to change the enthusiasm of the crowd, the run of the Razorbacks. I mean, you just go back and you look at the score against a team that was this, you know, really high quality, and then the noise level of that game. And like I say, the the play of the team, events in the game, are what make the roof go up at Bud Walton because of the noise level. And so while there were peaks in that game, it didn't match that one. Mm-hmm. And there's probably a couple more that I could point to that were like it. But again, you know, the players have got to do something to get the crowd going. It doesn't just happen on its own. So that's my take. Great to see it like that again, that for sure.
I think some of those early crowds in Bud Walton history in the, you know, in the 93-94 season, 94-95, they felt a duty or a sense of obligation to hold the standard that Barnhill had created. So I thought the crowds early on when that building was built 25 years ago, you know, understood, hey, we can't let it slip from what the magic of Barnhill was. And particularly because the teams were great, obviously. You know, got to the national championship game 2 years in a row, won one. The teams held up their part of the bargain. But I still thought that, you know, Barnhill was such a magical place. They wanted to make sure that transferred, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and what I took from it, too, is that there was always this concern in the back of my mind that as good as Arkansas could be again, or that they're hoping to be, could they recapture and still have an atmosphere like they did, just with the way that the game has changed in general? Because that was also during a time, as you guys know, that not every game was on TV. You know, not every Razorback basketball game was on TV. And if it was on TV, a lot of people maybe not had access to it. And you know that people would come to the games a lot more often. And you had a team that was always in the national championship conversation. Everything had changed. And now, as you've heard me complain just a couple of times about, with the way that the marketing is set up and the way that it's all advertisements everywhere, it's always tough to say, okay, well, we're going to stop this crazy run that you just went on and tell you about this sponsor. It showed me that it can be that again.
Yeah.
It can be that again. And that was my biggest concern, is can it get back to that point? Well, if you have a great team and a great game, it absolutely can.
And you're playing Kentucky. Yeah. So, I mean, I think the opponent mattered on Saturday.
Well, of course it did.
You know, and the town was, you know, at a fever pitch on Friday, and then on Saturday leading up, students were lined up. There's, you know, a lot of coverage of just the crowd and the anticipation for a game like this. Will there be another game on the schedule this year? We mentioned the Auburn game earlier. I just hate the fact that it's on a Tuesday night versus a Saturday. It's the way the schedule falls. I don't know if, you know, I think it's hard to get those crowds like that in today's time where it's all on TV on a weeknight.
Yeah. Especially if it's like at 7:30, 8 p.m. You know,
big game, big crowd Saturday. I think Bud Walton's going to be a hard place to come win on the road. I mean, credit Kentucky for what they pulled off.
Oh, yeah. That's
they
not
were
an
able
easy
to
thing.
Win in that environment. That tells you, you know, the kind of team that Calipari has there.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
next time we can see the whole game.
Yeah. Good point, Tommy. I was always sure from the point of Kentucky's loss at South Carolina that you were going to get their best shot, mm-hmm. and that the focus would be incredible. And I think despite what some people say, I've been around, and the basketball Kentucky talk will come up, and they'll say John's coaching doesn't match his recruiting. Well, I mean, I don't know how it could, but I think he's an elite coach, and I think he knows exactly what he's doing at all times. I would argue with some a little bit that he got the technicals intentionally. I don't think he wanted to be ejected from the game. The only times that I've ever seen a coach want to be ejected from a game, and this goes for, you know, 50 years, and whether it be high school or whatever, is when their team was – there was no way they were going to move. They were going to win, and he was tired of watching the game. Coaches feel like they are part of the game and part of the answer and want to be on the court with their team. If to make all of those decisions – they're almost anal in that way. They think that the decisions flow through them, and that very seldom do they think the players just play. I think Nolan has told me before. He said the players just play. I don't need to be there. I think that's way in the minority of what coaches generally think.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, they do not want to give up the controls. I mean, they're the only time they don't want to have their hands on the steering wheel is when they're in a limo and they're in the back seat and they're drawing up plays. It's the only time.
But you can look back at Calipari's history. We were mentioning the game with South Carolina a couple years ago when on the road, and Calipari gets beat or gets ejected in a game there that the I believe they went on to win. He has had a history, particularly in road games, of getting ejected.
So this bubbles into it, yeah.
This wasn't the first time that the Calipari had been run from a game. But it generally is.
It won't be the last.
It won't be the last. But it's generally big games on the road, big atmospheres on the road is where this kind of thing happens.
Yep, and it's usually an official that's made two or three calls, and it just takes him into that that rage, and he was in a rage, and that Gucci suit almost got torn by his guys trying to hold him back. I mean, it was in a bad state. He can afford all of those suits, but it looked like a button was about getting ready to be torn off of it.
Yeah. Well, and another thing,
I don't think it was an act either, guys. I think that he had gone into that, to that deal where he was almost ready to fight.
Well, and another thing, too, is that we've seen, and I know even in Arkansas from opposing coaches, we've seen coaches walk off the floor and go to the locker room. They eject themselves.
Nolan did that.
Yeah, Nolan did that against Texas back there in Austin. And, and he came back out
about 30 years ago.
But even coaches that Arkansas has gone up against in Bud Walton Arena, it was against, I'm trying to remember which it was, some directional school, but the coach just walked off the court. And so, that's obviously done with a purpose. That's intentionally trying to eject yourself from the game, because I believe the rule is, Tommy, if the coach leaves the court, they can't come back anymore.
Out of his coach's box.
Yeah, they can't come back anymore. So I know that's the case, too. But, it's just with what was going on in that game and Calipari getting ejected. Again, I'm not saying that he went in there calculating. I just have a hard time believing that he didn't keep pushing it. But he's been a coach for a long time. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to work it. And they gave him every opportunity to say, hey, stop. Stop doing this. And he kept going.
I think if he was truly, genuinely concerned about losing that game, he would not have gotten ejected. I don't think
that's
for
a
moment. I don't think for one moment Calipari thought his team was going to lose, even though that 8-point lead had evaporated. It was now tied. His team hadn't scored in like 6 minutes of game time. I don't think he was ever worried that we're about to lose this game. I need to get ejected to keep that from happening. I don't think those were. I think if he thought his team was going to lose, he would have found a way to stay in that game, to control himself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was worried about losing that game.
Well, I think the talent that Kentucky has is also helpful, but you could tell that also when, I guess it was Kenny Payne, was that the coach that stepped in for him? He's been around a long time. I know that Tony Barbie, who's another assistant coach, has been around a long time. Like, you also have capable coaches, too, that can step in to that role as well. But it just, when you look back on it, again, it's about the moment that you had. And honestly, most people felt like that was a moment where Arkansas could really step on the throat and finish them off, because anytime you lose your head coach and the heat is in the building, you just went on this big run, that's what you felt was very capable of happening. And that's got to be disappointing for Eric Musselman, especially. And if you watch his press conference, you could see him and hear him talk about it, that's where it all changed. He felt like the momentum had changed completely in the favor of Kentucky, which is a weird thing to think about if you really break it down. Arkansas just went on a long run. They're at home. It's a fever pitch frenzy there in that arena. Calipari gets ejected. And when everything is just coming out down on top of that Kentucky team and those Kentucky players, Eric Musselman says, yeah, when that happened, the momentum completely shifted Kentucky. It had nothing to do with something that happened on the court as far as in the game.
So what I thought, and let's talk about that a little bit, and you think, well, all right, the momentum is all in your favor, but you have to maintain your focus. And where it looked like that heightened the focus for Kentucky. They didn't make any mistakes. Their defense got better. Their offensive execution got better. They got better shots. Mm-hmm. That next 4, 5, 6 minutes, the Arkansas shot selection was poor. They settled for shots that weren't very good. I mean, that was the period where I was talking about it. All at once, you're not getting any good look. Basketball, to me, I've charted it, and I used to keep meticulous notes when I was the basketball writer and a top 25 voter, and I would keep all these charts and notes. Now they, you know, they just about do everything for you. But the team that gets the better shots is going to win, guys. Mm-hmm. And to that respect, the best shot you can get is an unguarded free throw, and Arkansas didn't convert those either. So, you know, missing front ends of 1-1. You got to get good shots in that stretch right after the double technical. That's when Arkansas's shots were the poorest. I'm not talking about execution. I'm just talking about what – I mean, they didn't make the shots, but they weren't going to make very many of those shots, guys.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned the free throws. The players, Jimmy Witt and Mason Jones, were asked about tightness. Maybe they were just a little too tight heading into this game because of the atmosphere and the energy. And, of course, they're never going to admit that they were tight. But I just felt like, especially with Mason Jones, who's been so automatic from the free throw line all season long, not to say he's been perfect, but he's shooting 90%, roughly around there, comes in here and misses some front ends of the 1-1, goes 8 of 12. It's out of character. And those are the types of things you have to rely on your guys, especially the consistent ones, your best players, Mason Jones, who, if he gets fouled, you feel like the same way you felt like with Dusty Hannes, you felt like with Daryl Macon, that it's like, okay, if the game's on the line or if you need a guy to make a free throw, he's your guy. He's your guy who takes your technical free throws. He does it all. And he didn't come up big in those moments.
Yeah. And so the other team knows that as well.
Yeah.
And when they see Mason Jones miss a free throw, they're like, we got him. We got him. This is our destiny, because that's not supposed to happen, and it is, and we're going to take advantage. And those guys, they're smart. They understand that. And it's those are chances for daggers. And you know, he missed one of the technical shots. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's you'd think he's gonna step up there and go 4 for 4, and he didn't.
Yeah. Because you don't always just need those shots, you know, obviously to score points to help your team, but not to just demoralize the other team and create doubt with them. At that point, Arkansas needed a little more to lift their own team, to lift their own confidence past that point. And
yeah, it goes back to exactly what Musselman said coming in. We're going to need A+. They're going in. The fans delivered A+. I'm not sure the team did, but that's okay. They'll use all of that. Musselman will coach all of that. You know, they just got to make sure that they don't, you know, let one loss lead into a second loss. And now he knew what was looming before the Vanderbilt game, which was very interesting to me. I've never heard a coach say this, that the Vanderbilt game was really important, because they knew Kentucky then going on the road against Mississippi State, and that you could be 0-3 really quickly. Mm-hmm. And I've never heard coaches say that. They don't like to talk about those. Yeah, but he used it as a coaching point. Guys, this is really important because of those two games that are coming right after that. And I think was dead on. But it usually is not verbalized by the coach so plain like that, but he did. Yeah. And so you have to make sure that game, you don't, and he says they'll be prepared. I know they'll be prepared mentally, because they don't leave any stone unturned in their preparation and their scouting. But you have to make sure that you're not still living in the moment of the Kentucky game. So, yeah. And we can talk about Kentucky. That's all right. We're just media and fans. We're not locked into those rules about coaches and players that have to turn the page. We don't have to turn it so quickly.
Yeah. Hey, RV Show prices right now to get the best selection at Crabtree RV in Alma. Their 70th anniversary is going on now. They got the RV Show coming up January 31st through February 8th, but you don't have to wait to get the best price or shop the best selection. You can stop in right now, see Travel Trailers and Fifth Wheels, but be sure and mark your calendar January 31st through February 8th for the RV Boat and Outdoor Show that will be there at Crabtree RV in Alma. Get RV Show pricing right now at Crabtree RV in Alma, where your family's dreams come true.
Yeah, because we were talking about this stretch and how Eric Musselman understood the Kentucky and then on the road to Mississippi State, then TCU at home, how important this is. You know, I could be wrong about this, but I feel like Arkansas is going to bounce back against Mississippi State in a great way, because they have in each in game that they've lost so far this year, which is, I mean, they've only lost three, and we've only been able to see the way that they bounce back against two of those losses. And each time they bounce back really well, and especially when they bounce back after that LSU loss, they went on the road and beat Ole Miss. in a nice fashion there at the end too. I just don't see this team going on against Mississippi State and the road in Starkville, and she's nothing against Mississippi State. They're playing really well right now, but I just don't see them coming out and laying an egg in Starkville. But the problem is too, is that Arkansas, I believe if the stats correct me if I'm wrong, but Arkansas has only won 2 of the last 16 games in Starkville. So it's not an easy place to play, and they've not had very good luck there. But I think Eric Musselman is a good enough coach and has proven that he's a good enough coach. And this team has proven to be mentally tough enough to turn the page and move on. Because even in their press conference after, we're talking about we got to move on Mississippi State. We got to focus on that game. We got to do a scouting report on that. I think that Arkansas is going to bounce back really well there. And then it's going to be about that TCU game, because TCU is no slouch either. They're a well-coached team. You get them at home, it'll be another great atmosphere on Saturday. Yep. But if you can go win these next 2 games especially, mm-hmm. you'll get right back on track to where you need to be.
You know, as mentioned, it's Saturdays, and the atmosphere and the sold-out crowds, we know that the arena is already, all the tickets are gone on the Saturday games. There's only 3 left, TCU, Mississippi State, and Missouri. So, I mean, there's more home games than that, but as far as Saturday home games yeah. that's it. There's only 3. So, you know, we're talking about these best atmospheres. I just think, you know, even in Auburn coming in on a Tuesday night, that's hard, particularly a Tuesday night when high schools are still playing their games around Northwest Arkansas across the state, and kids are never going to choose not seeing their kids. You know, it's just a tough deal. These weeknight games being on TV makes it hard to fill that arena with 19,000 plus.
Yeah.
You know, you wish you had more Saturday home games and some of these bigger games on Saturdays, but those are the 3 you have left.
Yeah. I still think, though, that Auburn game will have crazy crowd.
I think it'll be...
It's just not going to be 19-2.
Well, 15,000-17,000. It just won't be what we all enjoyed on Saturday.
Yeah.
And Auburn's lost their last 2, so we'll see how they bounce back. It's a huge week for Auburn.
Yeah. And I think that Arkansas had it announced that they had 19,200 there.
Which is building capacity.
Yeah, which is building capacity. But I also didn't think about the fact that, you know, I guess we're never going to have another 20,000 people game, because what's taking up a good size little chunk there that's up in the lower deck that wasn't there back in the 90s? And that's the media section.
Media seating.
And yeah.
Have they expanded student seating, or just the way they've shifted around?
They shifted it around.
Okay.
Yeah, they didn't necessarily expand it. So you may never see another 20,000 people game, but still, Saturday was packed. Saturday is,
well, if they could have easily sold 800 standing room only tickets like they do in baseball, where people can stand around the concourse. That building's just not set up for standing room only. There's really no place to stand. But I guarantee you could have sold an easy 1,000 tickets for people to be in the building, to witness the atmosphere, mm-hmm. to stand in the tunnels. They'd have just been in the way because they wouldn't have a seat, though.
Yeah. Well, I even said it to a buddy of mine that I was sitting next to. I'm like, if Bud Walton Arena had 21,000 capacity seating, there would have been 21,000 yeah. people there. And so this whole myth of saying, well, maybe they built Bud Walton too big.
No.
You know, that example, I'm not saying it's going to be like that every single game, but that example right there just shows you, no, it's not too big. You just got to put together a great team. And if you got a great team going up against great teams, good teams at least, especially in conference play on Saturdays, there's no reason why you can't average as a program that 18,000-19,000 people per game. You just got to bring it back. And that is a great indication of what's to come under Eric Musselman.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, gluten-free with no artificial flavors.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
We the best.
This is the worst.
It's time for the best and worst of the weekend.
All right. I want to see. Do we want to start with best or worst? You want to do
positive? The best.
Start with the best? Okay, that's fair enough. My best of the weekend is some low-hanging fruit, but I got to mention it anyways. Bud Walton. In the atmosphere that was with Arkansas and Kentucky. Kudos to all the students that were there early. All the students that got there at 6 a.m. Like the weather was awful. The wind was blowing. It was freezing cold. So kudos to them. Kudos to Hunter Yurachek coming out there and bringing the students food. Also wearing one of the shark outfits. He also did that too. Kudos to Sam Pittman going out there with Eric Musselman, handing out some more food. I don't think the kids went hungry.
No.
Plenty of food was being handed out there. But the students were great. The atmosphere was electric. Everyone was on the edge of their seats the entire time. I will give some kudos to the U of A for not having too much marketing stuff going on. And I also want to give a shout-out to all the students there, especially in the front, who tried to do the calling of the hogs at tip instead of having awkward random music play right before the tip-off. They tried it, but unfortunately the DJ drowned them out, and they weren't able to do it. So it was just in a great atmosphere, one that was very memorable. I've been going to games of Bud Walton for almost all my life. I've been there for some of the loudest and most great moments. You know, Auburn of 1999 was a great one. Obviously, Qualls' putback dunk was one that everybody will remember, too. But I have a hard time remembering a time where a moment was as loud as it was when John Calipari got ejected. I'm sure there is, and I'm sure people are going to have their own opinions on it, and that's fine. There's not a clear-cut fact on which – they don't have a decibel reading, I don't think, for when those moments happen. But kudos to everyone that showed up in that atmosphere. That felt like old times, if you will, at Bud Walton Arena. So for everybody that was involved in that, great job. Hopefully that is one of many to come in the coming season. With Eric Musselman, have a great team together. There's no reason why Bud Walton can't be packed and rocking against. That was my best.
Best of the weekend for me was the Chiefs getting back to the Super Bowl.
Back?
Well, they've been there 50 years ago.
I know. It just seems like it's been so long.
You know, I got a lot of friends, and I'm not a big Chiefs fan, but I got a lot of friends that are, and I'm happy for them. I thought one of the coolest things and one of the best things, though, was Jim Nantz with his tribute to Jack Buck and to Joe Buck, who will call the Super Bowl on Fox, and making note of the fact that, you know, that game 50 years ago, Joe's dad called the game. So that was a nice, fitting tribute. I thought just that whole deal yesterday with the AFC Championship game was really cool to see. A lot of people that I'm sure every one of us in some of our circles have a Chiefs fan in it, because it seems like the Chiefs are got a growing fan base here in the natural state. It's happy for a lot of those folks to get their team into the Super Bowl.
Now, I like what the Chiefs did and how they did it. And I like Patrick Mahomes, and yep, I like Andy Reid. Like, I was talking about this with a buddy of mine. The Chiefs are just, even if you're not a Chiefs fan, they're just like a likable team that you root for. You know, it's kind of reminds me of the San Antonio Spurs back when.
Unless you're from Denver, unless you're a Raiders fan, unless you're one of the AFC West teams, one of the rivals, unless you're a fan of one of those teams, why would you not root?
Yeah. I mean,
for the Chiefs.
Patrick Mahomes is as likable as they come. Andy Reid is as likable as they come. They're an organization that has a good fan base.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
they're regional for us.
Yeah, I'd have no problems with Kansas City. And in fact, when it comes to them or the 49ers, I'm probably going to root for Kansas City.
Yeah, absolutely.
Congratulations to all you Chiefs fans out there. You know, Kansas City, if they end up winning the Super Bowl, because when the Royals win, it was 5 years ago, 6 years ago?
Something like that. They've been in a couple times, you know.
So if they win that one, that's a good little stretch for you for your two major programs, two major teams to win a Super Bowl and a World Series. That's going to be big. So, yeah, that's a good one. What about you, Clay?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to watch the Chiefs. And to see their offense, the speed of their offense with Hill and several others, they have more speed than any of the NFL teams right now. I mean, there's others that they'll try to bruise you up. And with the running game, but it's about the speed and the quickness that they can hit you at from so many angles. And I think Mahomes' quickness in the pocket, being able to do things just with the flick of his wrist, you know, just heightens all those weapons. I'm going to throw out best is University of Arkansas professional golf over the weekend, where you had Andrew Landry getting his second win on the PGA Tour in really incredible fashion, where he had a big lead, lost it in the middle of the back nine, and then he birdied 17 and 18 when everybody thought that he was fading. And for Andrew Landry, that was incredible to watch. And then you had on the women's tour, Gabby Lopez wins the LPGA event in Orlando. And she has to do it in one of the lengthier playoffs. I think it's like seven holes. They had to shut it down by darkness last night. She came back and needed two holes this morning to close it out. So Sebastian Kaplan, another Razorback, was top 10 in the desert with Landry. So those two guys won a lot of money. Yeah, good weekend for University of Arkansas golf in both sides, the men's and the women's tour.
Yeah, I mean that was something that not a lot of people knew about or probably saw. So yeah, that's a great shout out there as well, Clay. The worst of the weekend. I know he kind of redeemed himself, kind of. But my worst was Dick Vitale. I'm not a fan of Dickie V. I've never really been a fan of Dickie V. He has not come to many Razorback games. In fact, well, I think the last time that people could chart back to Dickie V coming to town is in 1995. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about 25 years it's been since he's been to Fayetteville for a game. He comes in. And I don't understand that people don't like him, but he's a big deal. Like, let's just be honest. It's kind of like...
He's there, it's a big game, generally.
Exactly. I mean, and you can make that about so many other different deals. Like, if Kirk Herbstreit's calling your game in football, right, you know that's a pretty big deal.
Go back all the way to Howard Cosell.
Yeah.
Howard Cosell. You know, I don't know that he's a modern-day Howard Cosell, but he's a treasure, yeah, kind of like Cosell was back in the 70s.
College basketball and Dickie V have been synonymous for years.
Yes.
So, it was a big deal. But I look back on it, and I started to wonder, like, why hasn't he been here? Well, he needs to experience the greatness that it is. Well, he kind of really started off rough with the Razorback faithful as he put out some tweets making it look like that the only reason the atmosphere was going to be crazy in Fayetteville was because of Kentucky. It has more to do with the Big Blue Nation in Kentucky than it does Arkansas.
Well, there's some truth in that.
Well, there's truth in it in the way of, yes, it's a big game because it's Kentucky. But it's not like that this arena has only been having, 9,000 people. But when Kentucky comes to town, then it becomes a raucous atmosphere.
No, but he's right in the fact, it was going to be sold out. You know, these Saturdays are sold out. But we all know it goes to another level. And it's not just in Arkansas. It's at any school in the SEC or any school in their schedule. When Kentucky comes in, it just goes to another level. That is what Big Blue Nation does to your atmosphere. It creates a buzz that's 48 hours prior to the game in your town. So, you know, I know a lot of people got after him on Twitter, but there's a lot of truth in what he was saying.
See, but I don't agree. I think that it was more about, of course, the game in Kentucky, and I get that. Yeah, it's an element. But we've seen raucous and crazy atmospheres at Bud Walton Arena just over the past 10 years that had nothing to do with Kentucky. Like, yes, it is Kentucky. It's a big deal. But I still feel like it's kind of discrediting what the Razorback fan base and Bud Walton Arena can be on its own. They don't need Kentucky to have an electric atmosphere and electric game. Michigan came to town in 2012. Remember what the buzz was like for that game? You know, Tennessee, when they were a top team, they had a lot of buzz around that, too.
Syracuse came in.
Yeah, Syracuse.
But Kentucky was bigger.
Yeah.
It just was.
Well, I get that. I'm just saying that I feel like it was a poorly worded thing that was trying to discredit the Razorback fan base. Well, anyways, he is just getting raked over the coals on social media, even so much that the athletic director of Arkansas, Hunter Yurecek, put out that while there was a video of him handing out the food and everything and showing the students that was all out there saying, yeah, see, this isn't just for Kentucky. This is just Arkansas fan base. We don't have to have Kentucky to be here to have a great fan base, to have a great atmosphere, and for it to be electric. So it really set people off the wrong way. Dickie V got booed like crazy when he walked out on the court. I think it was almost a little surprising to him. But then he eventually, after a chant of delete the tweet came out from the student section, he changed his tune a little bit, then put out a tweet and saying just, you know, how it had nothing to do with Kentucky. This is just awesome from Arkansas. So just not getting off on the right track there, Dickie V. He was my worst of the
week.
Vitale is, without question, he caters to the blue bloods of college basketball.
No question.
And that's Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, Michigan State. And it is clear that those are the teams that almost all of his attention. And you know what? Those are the games that he sees. I mean, those are the teams that he follows. And it's not a coincidence that he was here when Kentucky was here. And it's so he doesn't have a lot of balance to what he does. It is heavy. In fact, late in the game, if you go back and you watch the, you know, when they were having a lot of the reviews, he was bored with all the reviews. This game's over. We need to move our cameras to the Duke game. Yeah. Duke-Louisville. And he said that about five times.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a slap in the face to the Razorbacks, which they still had a chance. I mean, they cut it to four in the last minute, and Kentucky played perfect down the stretch. But I was like, this guy, he doesn't get it. He really doesn't get it.
Yeah. And he's a big personality. He's, and like you said, Tommy, he's 80 years old, pretty incredible that he's still doing it at the age that he's at. But it was just one of those things that's like, man, don't try to take down the atmosphere a little bit. Try to build up Arkansas just at least, because you don't come here often.
But if you watch that broadcast from the sideline reporter, Chris Budden, to Bob Wischusian, who is with, it's all catered around featuring Dickie V, because when he's there, he is the show. And he's one of the few announcers that probably people actually, for some, I don't think a lot of Arkansas people, but for some around the country, they tune in just to see what Dickie V's got to say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's almost like validation when he talks about your program in a positive light.
Yeah, there could be another guy doing that game, and he could have tweeted the same thing out. Nobody would have even seen it because nobody's following his tweets.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And again, he made up for it. He redeemed himself, whatever, but it was just, I don't know. It was pretty irritating.
He played to the crowd.
Exactly right. So that was my worst of the weekend.
My worst of the weekend is just, it seems like, particularly in my lifetime, and I think you really go back to almost to 1969 in the shootout, these big games with these big anticipated atmospheres at home. Clay, it just seems like they never go your way. I mean, I just think about in recent times, you go back to the USC game that started, the 06 season, the 2010 Alabama game in football. There hadn't been as many in basketball. This was one of the more recent ones, and John mentioned Michigan and Syracuse and some of these games that came in. But it just seems like none of these games that are highly anticipated, hardest ticket in a long time to get, you know, they're great games and they're very memorable games, but they never go your way. I guess that was my word, just the disappointment of, once again, a big atmosphere, a big build-up to a game in Fayetteville, it doesn't work out. Just seems like it never does in these situations for Arkansas. Never able to get over the hump enough. Seems like there's a lot more examples of not getting over the hump than getting over the hump, particularly at home even.
I think you can say that. And I mean, it's obviously there's been a trend lately. And we need one of these to turn the other way. And this team is still going to have some big games down the stretch, and maybe the Auburn game will be that for Arkansas fans. You know, it even goes back to baseball where they didn't get it done with an out to go in the national championship game, and you lump that one in there too. And I know it's not football or basketball, but it still was a great moment and a chance to have a parade, right?
Yeah.
it didn't happen. Yep.
Yeah. No, I put it out on Friday that the highest attended games in Razorback football, basketball, and in baseball, all at Razorback Stadium, Bud Walton, and Baum Stadium, all have ended with a loss for the Razorbacks. That's got to be frustrating, right? Your three biggest crowds, each one in your major sports, all ended in a loss. Yeah. Got to be frustrating. Yeah. So, didn't want to bring up any sour grapes or anything.
But there's been an awful lot of great moments in baseball.
Oh, for sure,
In some of those crowds were, those regionals that clinched. For instance, the super regional with Ole Miss, unbelievable high last year. I think that's. I'm just ready to win a few football games, guys.
Yes,
I'm right there with
you. Isn't everybody? So, what's your worst of the weekend, Clay?
You know, I didn't have a worst. I mean, I had a good weekend.
That's not fun.
I everything about it. The teams that I wanted to win, the NFL games went my way. There was no worst part about it. I got to duck hunt this weekend. The Ducks came out on the worst end of it than I did, so you can't, I had a great meal with friends Saturday night. We had fillets for appetizer.
Oh, man.
We had fillets
Ahoy
from Richard's Steaks. Yeah. it was off the charts. So I can't, the people that are around, my college roommate, Leo Crafton, I can't look back and say that there was anything about the weekend that I didn't like. Other than, just the outcome of the Kentucky game, and y'all already covered that. So, I did not let that get in the way of having a great weekend. And I guess, you know, part of that, to being the worst of the weekend, the loss to Kentucky, is the good part that we know that this is a good Arkansas basketball team and they're going to win a lot more games. And I think more than likely they're going to be in the NCAA tournament, you know, barring a collapse, you know, an injury or something that would derail them. You know, it's like I suspect that Musselman will use that game as great coaching moment, and they'll fix some things that appeared to be broken in that game. They may get another shot at Kentucky later this year.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm not going to let anything in this weekend get me down.
Well, that's a very optimistic outlook on the weekend. I'm glad that you could have it that way, Clay. I'm glad that nothing bad happened to you and you got to eat fillets as appetizers.
As an appetizer.
Yeah.
Hey, best and worst of the weekend is brought to you by Williams Tractor. New Holland Dealer Days are back, and Williams Tractor is opening their doors to help you tackle the season ahead. Special preseason savings are available now, featuring 0% financing and cashback offers on select New Holland hay tools, tractors, and material handling equipment. Stop in today at Williams Tractor in Fayetteville, Berryville, or Bobcat of Northwest Arkansas in Rogers.
Also, I want to throw in another final good real quick, because a lot of people were tweeting about this too, and I agree with them. Dre Greenlaw heading to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's good for him. So, know that his journey, and we've talked about it numerous times here on this show, and I know people have been writing about it, but his journey in football has been nothing short of incredible. And to see him going to the Super Bowl, have a chance for a Super Bowl ring, I'm going to be rooting for the Chiefs, but I won't be too upset if the 49ers win and Dre Greenlaw gets him a Super Bowl ring. Because, I mean, it's amazing what he has become. Because, Clay, what was it talking about? That he was coming out of high school. He was originally a safety that wasn't really highly recruited.
He really was a kind of a do-it-all guy at Fayetteville High. He played safety. And I know Rob Smith went over and looked at him and says, I don't think you're quite fast enough to play safety, but you're fast enough to be an outside linebacker. So that was a great call by Rob. Yeah, you know, he played return kicks, return punts, played some running back, played some wide receiver. You know, he used his speed and his I would say just overall savvy, the way he understood football to you know, he's just always going to be around the ball, or you want him to have the ball. Great person as well as a great player. I think you said a lot of the things about Dre that kind of endear him to all of us in the media that were around him. Just always optimistic, and you just think about being in the foster care program and how many different homes where he, you know, was scattered. Never let it, always was positive, and you know, got a pull for him. You really do.
Yeah, and he also celebrates victories not with champagne, but with Starburst candy. He was showering everybody with Starburst. So
unique.
Yeah, it is unique. Yeah. But I'd probably enjoy Starburst and enjoy the cleanup of Starburst a lot more than I would champagne.
The really sour ones.
Those don't get in your eyes and sting as much as champagne can.
Yeah. Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.